Hello, fellow Vault Hunters. I'm J. Michael Tatum, and you're listening to The Geek Show.
Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Press X, episode 17, I believe it is. We are the Geek Show's video game review show, and we're not critics. We're just some guys sat around a setup on the internet. We're not in the same room because that's not modern enough. Talking about games. We're not critics. We're just guys talking about games, shoes off and everything. So I'm Rob.
I'm also Andy.
Andy there. And other Rob.
Hello.
Just guys, yeah. Yeah.
What is it with you saying it like that? It sounds creepy.
Just guys, yeah.
Andy,
yeah,
are you a guy? Hello, guy.
Although my socks aren't off.
Yeah.
I'm just
is
waiting
that the qualifier?
I'm just worried he's going to switch over and suddenly start calling us dude.
I wasn't talking like that, don't.
Don't ask me where my car is. I'm perfectly fine.
So how is everybody anyway? How's things? How's tricks?
Tricks are good. I sound a bit like biscuits, but
I shouldn't have said that. How is everybody?
I was getting worried.
I'm talking to pedantic people, so if I say something different, you're going to pounce on it.
It's not that. I was getting worried that Andy was turning tricks.
Hey. So we all okay? Everything's okay with you guys, eh?
Yes, everything is fine.
Have you been playing any other games besides these? That's something I want to...
Well, I've been having a VR binge.
Is that a good thing?
Yeah, well, I'm lost in the final few hours of Resident Evil 7 again, so...
Isn't it only a few hours long anyway?
No, it's about 9 hours if you take your time.
Yeah.
Hang on, about 9 hours if you take your time?
Yeah.
So basically...
Can you take your time on a scary game, or is it just, oh my god, there's a big melting face man who's going to eat me? And
there's puzzles.
Oh, right, okay.
So basically, it's about the same length. If you take your time, it's about the same length as a day spent playing golf.
What about you, Rob?
Me? I've been playing stuff. I've kept playing Toy Odyssey because it's weirdly addictive.
Nothing wrong with that.
It's just strange. I've been making a start on Akiba's Beat, which I'll be talking about next week.
Well, personally, my game that I can't stop playing has been twofold. Because, you know, since the release trailer for Shadow of War, Middle-Earth, which I thought looked amazing.
Yes.
And I've been playing the original, and it seems like the new one's papered over a lot of the cracks. You know?
Okay.
Because you're always sort of overpowered by everybody, so to change that aspect of it, it takes the game and 180s it, I think. That's something I'm looking forward to. So I've been playing the original as sort of a build-up to it.
Yeah. I've kept playing the Italia Ferris game, obviously, because... Terminal fan here.
And I've also been playing Darksiders 2.
Such a good game. And I'm so happy about the announcement for Darksiders 3.
It's one of these games which is, it's very much like Legacy of Kain, going back way in the day, the game that pretty much everybody's forgotten about. Because it has that sort of, the big wide open areas where you've got to puzzle your way through, and it doesn't guide you in any way. You just kind of got to...
Are you on about Soul Reaver?
Figure it out yourself.
Yeah, are you on about Soul Reaver? Yeah.
Soul Reaver was like that.
Yeah, there's about eight of them, wasn't there?
I was going to say, because when people say the Legacy... I get confused when people say talk about the Legacy of Kain, because I have the original one, the original Blood Omen game, which is called Blood Omen, the Legacy of Kain.
Mm. Well, he was actually called Raziel, wasn't he? So
yeah.
I've got them all on Steam. I haven't played them again yet, but okay. They're great games.
Yeah. And the Darksiders reminds me a lot of that, and I don't think the whip's going to work so well for number three, but we'll see.
Interesting you mentioned the whip, because it's one of the weapons in Tokiden 2, which I'm talking about today.
Yeah, but anyway, we'll jump into what we're playing for the show, because, you know, we've got to separate it out like that. We've got to compartmentalise, because that's what you do these days, don't you? You compartmentalise everything.
You've got to keep them separated, do you?
Yeah, you do. My first game... Unlike what I've put down on the notes, it's not The Purge, because although that would make a good game, I can't deny, you know, one day where just do whatever crime you want.
Well, I don't
know.
It
would actually make a great game, rather than the film.
Yeah, but I mean, all it'd be is you. It's just basically someone going a bit psycho on Grand Theft Auto. That's all. That's all the purge would be.
Oh, you're reducing it really bad there.
It's the riot cheat from San Andreas, isn't it?
Yeah, that's all it is.
Do you remember that game? No. Do you remember that game on the PlayStation 2, which everybody's also forgotten about, called State of Emergency?
Yes. Ah, yes. I remember that one.
Yeah,
it's basically that, but better. But anyway, it's not the purge; it's the surge, which is very similar.
And so, is this about some model from like Eastern Europe or something like that called Surge?
It's not about Johnny. It's not about Johnny Five going mad or anything.
No, I said like a male model from Eastern Europe called Surge.
Ah, that's our Surge. No, it's from the people, a company called Deck 13, and they're not very well known. And the major game they did before this was The Lords of Fallen, which I think was the first game that came out after the sort of the crazy success of Dark Souls, sort of chimed into what that game was and what it does.
Lords of the Fallen was that really bland, really brown one, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was kind of like Castlevania, Dark Souls-ish stuff. I meant Lords of
Fallen. Yeah.
The recent Castlevania, not the classic one. I dispute its classic status, but there we go. That's another story for another day. But yeah, this has been put up by Focus Home Interactive as well. They're kind of a sleeping titan.
They are. They're very much a sleeping giant. They constantly put out these odd little titles, and some of them are really eye-catching. I mean, we've got two of them.
Better with every game. Yeah, every game they release is better. And they've got one coming out later on this year, which is probably my most anticipated of the year, in Vampyr.
Yeah. We've got two of their games on today's show. There's The Surge, and Andy's going to be talking about Styx later on as well.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. But on The Surge, it uses that Dark Souls format again. It's the very hard difficulty curve. You have like a stamina bar, which you can upgrade through your character. It's sort of arbitrarily like Dark Souls ideology of game like that, in the very vaguest of sense. What it actually is very, very different. You start the game, you may as well be a nameless character because, you know, these games don't really have... The character is what's happened to the world. The character is the character and the way you update him and the people you face in the sort of the game world.
Yeah.
You're just playing like a sort of a bland vanilla avatar. But that doesn't mean Deck 13, you know, done an interesting thing, because as you start the game, you're actually in a wheelchair. Like pushing your way around, and I don't recall ever, even incidentally, playing a game where your lead character is wheelchair bound. I think the closest you got was the absolute lack of mobility that that Snake got in Metal Gear Solid 4.
Yeah,
That's the closest I can think of. So that's a really bold move, I think, in making your character that is disabled like that.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
But he's in this. He goes to this. Place, well, you start in this place. It's a company called CREO. It's a mega corporation. It's going to save the world because the world kind of went to hell in a handbasket. Technology has gone wild and kind of destroyed everything.
Isn't it just called CREO?
Well, if you want to call it CREO, yeah. But I like acronyms.
I didn't think it was an acronym. I thought it was just called CREO Corp.
Everything's always an acronym.
True. Always. True. True.
But yeah, gets... cybernized. I don't know what you want to call it.
Cyberized. You added too many ends to that word. Cyberized.
Yeah, sorry, I overcomplicated it. But yeah, you go into this room and he gets put on this slab. And what happens is he's supposed to be sedated, but he isn't. And what actually happens is he gets these metal bits put into his flesh and drilled into his flesh. You see the sort of the blood. Pouring out, and they do bits into his skull, but it cuts away sort of a fine there. And from there, you basically wake up in the middle of the floor, chaos everywhere, and you got a sort of it's the worst day on the job. I really like that actually, but I also don't. What I don't like first, I think, is how it's best to finish on something good. Is I don't know whether it's in the Dark Souls thing. In fact, no, it wasn't a Dark Souls thing because there was some sort of sense of. Direction in the level design with Dark Souls. Not a great one, but it was there. Whereas in The Surge, it's just kind of, you never know where you're going next, and it's hard to figure it out because the way the world is, all the chaos, all the sort of spliced and smashed metal, it cuts off paths to you, and it gets very confusing.
Could that be a purposeful thing, though? in the level.
It's purposeful, but it's kind of frustrating because I don't know where to go, and the men keep on regenerating. Oh, it's annoying in the heart it beat.
3 hours passed, and you're still on the same bit.
Yeah. I mean, I was on the same bit, and I was amazingly overpowered because I kept on getting lost and dying, but I had like great kit.
You know, you would be the worst Hansel in the Hansel and Gretel fairy tale, would you?
Yeah, basically. But the interesting thing is, you basically play Tetsuo the Iron Man. Now, there's an obscure reference.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a bit left field for a video game podcast, isn't it?
It's a Japanese movie, a body horror movie, in which a man slowly turns into a metal man, and it's quite grotesque about it. Because the reason why I say that is you have that scene at the beginning where he has all the bits drilled into him, but after that, you can sort of like cut bits, you can target your blows specifically at like certain parts of the beasts and monsters and robots that you happen upon, and sort of take that bit as your own and use it for yourself.
You don't have to go through a graphic scene like they did in Tetsuo the Iron Man, do you?
No, you don't.
Thank God for that.
You can upgrade bits, you can pick up sort of bits of scrap and build your character up, and sort of there's different levels of upgrades and there's different machines that you face, and you can have different types of weapons. You can have like a massive like spanner, basically, or you can have like dual wielding. He's quite a mobile character. He's probably closer to what the character was in what was the other one? The Japanese... The one which much more like Onimusha.
Oh, Neo.
Neo and Nia, the very like title. It's more like that. He the character would be more mobile if he wasn't, you know, covered in metal and strewn with metal and big metallic things. But even though it is sort of Dark Souls derivative, and it is that sort of trial error hard gameplay style RPG.
Yeah.
It does enough to say, this is me, this is what I'm doing. It's unique, there's nothing else like me. And it's also quite creepy, and not in a sort of obvious way that Dark Souls was, because it was trying to be creepy.
Yeah.
In this, it's the absolute deafening silence.
Really?
Which is creepy, yeah.
Because normally...
I like a lot.
Normally with video games, they feel the developers often feel the urge to fill up all that silence with little random noises or some music or something like that, don't they?
It's a very minimal sound design in this, but yeah. Yeah.
That sounds actually quite interesting. I'd be interested in that.
I mean, in this sort of gameplay genre, whatever you want to call them, I don't think it's going to convert anybody who hates this stuff. But as a grown genre, I think it's a very interesting and very left-field alternative to people who just don't want the dark fantasy crap.
Yeah. Not all dark fantasy is crap, but... It's just
Dark Souls is, yeah.
Well, I said dark fantasy. I didn't say Dark Souls. Yeah, not all. The thing is, I hate the term dark fantasy. Fantasy by its very nature is.
I can't think of a way to term it. It just seems like that's what stuck. And
it's not that. It's just you know, dark fantasy is one of those terms that you usually use to describe novels like Twilight.
Oh, well, really? Yes, we're off then.
Yeah,
I shouldn't use
exactly.
That.
Which is why I don't like the term. And fantasy by its nature is quite dark anyway.
Probably more like depressing fantasy.
Well, the thing is, Lord of the Rings wasn't exactly sweetness and light, was it?
Well, they had Tom Bombadillo that they cut out of everything.
Yeah, they cut out Tom Bombadil of everything. But, you know, it's not like fantasy is generally quite a bright thing with rainbows and sunflowers and everybody smiling happily. There's usually blood in there somewhere.
Yeah, it's a very bloody game, this one. Yeah, you can aim for people's heads or their bodies and you can chop them in half with like with a giant like spade hammer.
Isn't that a bit like Doom?
No. There's actual colour in this. Doom's just kind of all black and red.
No, I mean the aiming bit where you can actually aim for a particular part of the body.
No, on the new one, you mean?
Yeah.
No, nothing like that. There's nothing like that. Oh, well, in Doom, you just kind of... That was like the finishing manoeuvre.
Oh, was that just the finisher? Okay, Scratch Doom. That old PS1 game from the then Squaresoft, who are now Square Enix.
Do you mean Bushido Blade?
No, Vagrant Story.
Oh, yeah, you did that there, didn't you?
Because you could aim for like different parts of the body on that, couldn't you?
Yeah, there's two obscure references for you retro game fans.
Yeah.
It also sounds like the Fallout VAT system.
Bless you, Andy.
I was thinking we have to get back from the retro. And I know people are pointing out Fallout 3 is actually quite a bit old now.
Yeah.
But
a 16-year-old gamer would call Fallout 3 retro.
Mm.
We're a bit more seasoned than that, I think, on here, on this show.
I'm not seasoned, I'm pickled.
Yeah. Although it will happen, hypothetical 16-year-old gamer, when the games that you grew up with will legitimately be referred to as retro and you will feel old.
People say that about the original Metal Gear Solid and that makes me cry.
It'll happen to you. See, it's happened to Andy already.
Grandpa system.
Yes.
Change what cool is and then you're no longer cool and it's confusing and scary.
Yes. And then there will come a time when you're playing a video game and you will fall asleep in front of the video game. And then you know it's over.
Moving on, though, to Andy, I guess.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Going on to another series that's actually 5 years old now.
Well, really?
We're talking about the new Walking Dead from Telltale, which is season 3.
It's not exactly season 3, is it? Is it?
Yeah, it's season 3, but before you get onto this, rewind yourself back to season 1.
Yes.
Andy, did you think, oh, I want more of this? Or did you think, that's a brilliant ending? They don't need to do anything else. Just move on to new titles.
Well, the way they ended it, it left it on I think it was the bit after credit scene where Clementine was. You knew a second one was coming. If they didn't have that after credit scene, then yes, it was a perfect ending.
Yeah.
And are you on about the ending to Walking Dead Season 1 or Season 2?
Season 1.
All right, okay, yeah.
This isn't counting the Michonne miniseries. This is Season 3, and it's entitled A New Frontier.
Hmm.
When you look into the end of the second season,
yeah,
this takes your decisions into account very loosely throughout the series, well, the season, because this goes on a completely different tangent and starts off with a new group of characters led by a new protagonist called Javier, or Harvey, as they call him.
Okay.
And basically,
he's Spanish.
He might be Spanish.
Yeah, he might be Mexican. He might be Colombian. He might be Brazilian. We don't know.
I was talking about the wider Spanish family of countries. The countries that speak Spanish.
But anyway, you're introduced at the beginning to a new family. And you got Javier and his brother David. Yes, look at the names. And his wife Kate and children Gabe and Mariana. And they're set off after, I think it's their granddad at the time that gets bitten by a zombie. Yeah. So they leave home. And at the beginning, David decides to leave and doesn't come back. And they assume him dead. So this leads off into a time jump. And they're basically... You encounter Clementine, who's by herself. I'm not going to put any spoilers into what happened between 2 and 3, but she's by herself.
She'd be a teenager now, won't she?
She is around about between, let's say, 15 and 17.
Yeah, that's fine.
But she's very experienced. She'd basically gone to what, similar to between Terminator 1 and 2 with Sarah Connor.
All right, so...
She's very...
It's when she started doing push-ups.
I was going to say, when you first see Clementine, is she doing like chin-ups? You know, and she's built like a kind of a female version of Arnold.
Yeah. But so she's not in prison, though. That'll be a real turn-up. But...
I did a reference to Hunt for the World of People there, and it completely went unnoticed, but go ahead.
But anyway, after meeting with Clementine, they bump into the new villains of the series called The New Frontier. And basically, in similar fashion to what the TV series goes into, they're this new group of villains that you just learn to hate. And it's a very revengeful storyline.
Are they the group who basically turn to cannibalism and cover themselves in sort of zombie blood to survive?
No. Ah. It's like a community that scavenge other people's belongings for themselves. And... they're just not very nice people. And then you get an antagonist that you learn to really, really despise throughout the 4 episodes that have been released so far.
Well, there's no heroes or likeable people at this point in the end of the world, really, is there?
Oh, no. But But if any of us played Michonne, the miniseries, there was a villain in that that you, well, it's a similar sort of thing. You despised him throughout the full three episodes of that series, and this is exactly the same. Hopefully when the fifth episode comes, you can let all that out.
Yeah, everybody dies horribly.
Except for Clementine. I thought we liked Clementine.
Having a over the course of the episodes turns out to be a very likeable, like playable character, main protagonist.
Okay.
There has been one big talking point where people haven't liked this one so much.
Mm.
It's that the episodes are much shorter, aren't they?
Yes, but they're probably a bit shorter than what season two was. But season two got, was like, half as long, so...
Like, I think, if anything, the thing which has sort of skewed that slightly is season one, the episodes were too long.
Mm. Oh, so, yeah, about 3.5 hours.
There was a lot of padding.
But you're looking at about half an hour. You're looking at about 1.5 hours for each episode.
Well, that's like a movie for each episode. Mm. That's not so bad.
And when they charge about £15 for the game, you can't really complain.
Yeah, that's fairly reasonable. But how does it stack? Is it better or worse level? Is it like a downward curve? One's best, two's middle.
It's
the worst.
It's different. It's not something you can measure against it. But I'd say up to now, it is slightly less than the second season.
Yeah. I'm disappointed in Telltale Games, actually.
Why?
Because they've kind of become like Lego games.
That's true. They have just announced a Lego game there, but that would be brilliant. a Marvel property. It wasn't including Guardians.
Yeah. It's just the nothing about the franchise to attach it to, and that's... I'd like to see Telltale just do what they want, like a completely unattached game.
Yeah. Well, they've done that a few times. Oh, no, that's actually... I was going to say Sam and Max, but no, that's an actual franchise, isn't it?
Going back to Sam and Max, there's Back to the Future. Telltale, you know.
Because
I think that might recharge the batteries, because they are stretching themselves a bit thin. Because they've got, they've always got two games on the go at once, it seems.
Yeah, that's the only thing I think that's changed now. I think they do need to slow it down a little bit. I'd rather have one game that's really good, but... what I like about what they're doing now, they're releasing the episodes fairly quicker.
Yeah.
Like, for example, the first two episodes of The New Walking Dead came out on the same day, on the 20th of December.
Okay.
That's not bad.
And then the two after was the end of March and the end of April. So I take it we're pretty much on the cusp of the next one. So. Yeah. Considering it took a year to release the first one.
Mm, yeah.
Quite a difference.
I also think they should do more kids stuff, because I think Minecraft is probably their most underrated game.
I played the first, I think it was two episodes of that, and I thought that was brilliant.
Do you know what would be interesting? Because they've done Minecraft, and obviously there's one property they haven't got their mitts into, which is Lego. And I could see that happening at some point, you know. Maybe Telltale's adventure game in Lego City or something like that.
Oh, right, yeah. I wonder what you were going with. But yeah, that'd be interesting.
I was going to say, a Lego Telltale crossover might be a bit confusing.
But then again, they've got Guardians of the Galaxy as one of their games now. So, you know, there's the Chris Pratt connection. They might do a Lego movie video game adventure type thing.
It's gone from a completely different angle. It'd be really interesting to see them tackle some material from elsewhere in the world. Like, he is a hypothetical one for all you manga fans. A Telltale Vinland Saga.
Nah, I don't think that'd work.
Oh, it would.
Nah, I think Vinland Saga would be better off being done by... Being done... I don't know, actually. Yeah, I see what you mean. Thinking about it. I think if you were going to do a Telltale game as a historical fiction...
Like, do like what they did with Game of Thrones, but, you know, good.
Mm.
Yeah. Vinland Saga could work, I suppose.
Anyway, that's Walking Dead. So you're enjoying it, the last important part, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. I'm looking forward to the last episode. I do recommend it. If you loved the other ones and you weren't too let down by the second season, which I still thought was really good, you'll still love this. And
I like
again, it's not £40, so
yeah.
It's well worth the money.
Cool.
Right. And now 180 time.
Oh no, this isn't 180. This is going complete. This is going. I've gone long, way, way, way long, and I'm standing here waiting. You know, I'm out in the outer field waiting for you guys to throw me the ball.
It's like 720. I think that's if you go in angles.
Yeah, if you go in angles, this is a complete departure from everything we've talked about so far, right?
Yes.
And I'm going to get comfy for this because this is going to be complicated. Koei Tecmo have been churning out games the last few months, and they've been churning out some decent games, some great games, some decent to great games. Not many duffers, I've got to admit. And if you looked at this particular game, a lot of people would look at it and go, I'm not playing that.
Because it's super niche. That's what Tecmo Koei do.
Yeah.
Super, super niche games.
But the thing is, a lot of people would also assume, because of what it is, oh, it's another Dynasty Warriors type game. And it's not. It's so not. What we're talking about is Romance of the Three Kingdoms 13. Now,
do you have to play the previous 12?
No, you don't. Okay. Now, I just want to emphasize, this is the 13th game in the series. And for those people who don't know what Romance of the Three Kingdoms is, Romance of the Three Kingdoms is... Basically, it's attributed to Luo Guangzhong, and it's a historical novel set in the turbulent years towards the end of the Han Dynasty, and the Three Kingdoms period in Chinese history, which started in 169 AD and ended with the reunification of the land in 280 AD.
I think you've got to leave it at that, because knowing Chinese history like I do from Kung Fu movies, basically...
it gets
incredibly complicated.
Hang on, isn't that like piecing your history together from sugar packets?
Oh, no. That's doing Kung Fu movie disservice. Anyway, don't be that guy, Rob. You like these movies.
I know. I'm not being that guy. Look, all I'm saying is, do you not get the Simpsons reference there?
No.
It was a Grandpa Simpson reference. I pieced my history together mostly from sugar packets.
Chinese history in the Warring States era is incredibly dense and complicated.
Yeah, but anyway, this is a historical fiction, and I am going to have to reference some Chinese history because it's part of the game, right? There's no way around it. But Romance of the Three Kingdoms is, first and foremost, a strategy game. And being on a console, the first thing you say is, oh, strategy. No, console, don't do strategy.
XCOM worked.
Yeah, and that's my point. Most people would say console don't do strategy, but XCOM is a thing, and Romance of the Three...
because it upset me, and it kept on teasing me, but it worked.
Yeah, I know, but it was a strategy game, pure through and through. Dyed-in-the-wool strategy game was XCOM, and Romance of the Three Kingdoms is also a strategy game, just like Nobunaga's Ambition, which is the other one that Koei Tecmo have done. Now, there are big differences between Romance of the Three Kingdoms 13 and the previous installments, and also big differences between this game and the Nobunaga's Ambition, and especially the Sphere of Influence version of the game. So, what we got was the Romance of the Three Kingdoms plus its expansion, which is an interesting addition, an interesting enhancement of the game. You start off the game in the way that the story starts off. The Yellow Turban Rebellion is going on, and the country is in crisis. Things are falling apart left, right, and center. You start off as the character of Liu Bei, and you are a young man. You love your country. You want to do something for your country. You want to hold it together. You want to protect the people, and you want to do your duty as a citizen, And you're not sure what to do, but you meet two people who are in your town at that time. One of them is a young man called Guan Yu, and the other man is a gentleman called Zhang Fei. And the three of you basically take what is now known as the Oath of the Peach Garden, and that is the point where the Three Kingdoms story starts. Because each of these three characters will then become, they will be Oath Brothers, but they will then go their separate ways to form their own kingdoms later on. And this is where the Romance of the Three Kingdoms, where it gets the name Romance from. It's basically the whole man's romance, adventure, you know, combat, brothers in arms, walking the road of Jianghu. And if you don't know what the road of Jianghu is, all those people who like wushu novels, you guys know, don't worry. Just stand off to one side and just applaud yourselves.
Don't say that.
Hey, I've been reading a lot of Chinese novels.
Well, la-di-da, Mr. Wa-di-wa.
Anyway, look, Romance of the Three Kingdoms, it's kind of come out of left field and caught me by surprise because I didn't expect it to be anywhere near as good as it is. Let's get that right out of the way. Now, you guys know I love my strategy games, right? I've made no secret about the fact that I like my strategy games, and Romance of the Three Kingdoms is what's known as a grand strategy game.
They're right? It's a hard genre to be a fan of these days.
It is a hard genre to be a fan of, but Romance of the Three Kingdoms is a grand strategy war game. A grand strategy war game is a strategy game where you are effectively in control of the fate of an entire nation or an empire. Its development, its military development, its social development, its financial development, all of that is dependent on your decisions. And in Romance of the Three Kingdoms, you start off as Liu Bei, and you've got two main modes that you can go through. There's a hero mode where it teaches you how to play the game, and then there's the normal game mode where you basically play through the Romance of the Three Kingdoms, right? Now, one of the great things about this game is as you're playing the game, you basically, a lot of how you achieve things, a lot of your special moves when you're in battle, a lot of these things come from the relationships that you form with other people. And you can basically make friends with everybody in this game. And I mean that quite literally. If you approach people the right way, then you can make alliances, you can form friendships, and you can, in many cases, the story can deviate wildly from the Romance of the Three Kingdoms story, the original story, that is, because of the relationships that you form. I've been playing this game, and there are situations where I should have been fighting a war against a particular character, but because I made friends with the character, I don't have to fight that war anymore, and they're actually an ally now.
Oh, that's interesting.
Do you see what I mean? So the story can deviate wildly from the original material. Other bits that are actually quite interesting is when it comes to actual combat, and you basically, if you're not taking part in that particular battle, then all you can do is kind of automatically, you've got some degree of control over it, but it's not much. So you have to try and plan your strategy beforehand, and the battles can take a long time because you can reinforce, but your enemy can also reinforce, which drags the battle out a bit. And so you could be sitting there for ages with some of the battles. Now, that can be a bit of a downside if you're only wanting, you know, a quick session with this. And I would advise, if you're only wanting a quick session with the Romance of the Three Kingdoms, then you're kidding yourself. Seriously, the quick session on this game is not going to happen. So you've been warned, all right?
Ah, so it's like me and FIFA.
Yeah, basically. Well, remember when you were playing, what was it, Civilization, Rob? And you lost hours?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so like that. Not a quick game. Yeah, there's no such thing as a quick game when it comes to this game, right? Now, you've got several options when you actually are playing characters. You can basically take on the role of a character who is who's subordinate to a governor or a regional ruler or something like that, and you can earn merits from doing missions for them, fighting battles for them, that sort of thing, which then you can use to increase the size of your army, get new skills, that sort of thing. Or you could be the regional government, that sort of thing, the regional governor, or the ruler of that particular area, and you could listen to the advice of your subordinates and choose what advice you listen to and follow through on various things and control the situation direct from the very top. There's two interesting gameplay elements to this game, though, which really add a degree of, what's the word I'm looking for, originality and uniqueness to this game. One of them is the duel, right? There are going to be times when you piss someone off or when someone pisses you off. And during those times, you can challenge them to a duel. Now, it's normally a horseback duel with spears. And it's basically a glorified version of rock, paper, scissors, but it's done so stylishly. It's not simply two people going, rock, paper, scissors. You are charging at each other with spears on horseback.
Hey, Alex the Kid was plenty tense, and that's what that was.
But the other weird version of rock, paper, scissors that they have in this is the debate. And that's the other interesting element that adds a degree of originality to this, because I've not played another strategy game where I could debate with the opposition leader and convince them using arguments, using logical arguments, and the level of intelligence that I have at that point to basically either not fight with me and stay out of the way or join me. Do you see what I mean? And that's one of the interesting things about this game, because it is a grand strategy game. You're not just fighting one battle after another. You're basically making plans for the future of your country, to take over that area, to take over a bigger area, to take over the country. You know, it's that sort of game. So you have to have a degree of foresight in your planning, in your strategy, and things like that. Now, there are some downsides to the game, which I'm going to cover, because I've played a bunch of the other games before, right? Because the first Romance of the Three Kingdoms game I played was on the PS2, and it was Romance of the Three Kingdoms number 8. And then after that, I hunted down a few of the other games and played those. Now, I got to say, the officer play in this is not as good as Romance of the Three Kingdoms 10. That tended to have much deeper control, That had much deeper control, and it allowed you to fine-tune things a lot better when it came to officers. The best combat still has to be Romance of the Three Kingdoms 8. And unfortunately, the series hasn't really managed to capture the fun of the combat in that game. Or recapture it, I should say. The duels in the series have been around for a while. And, you know, some of the games have been better, some of them have been worse. Romance of the Three Kingdoms 13 is about the same as the better ones when it comes to the duels. But the war side of things, when it comes to micromanagement of the war, which is actually quite a big part of the game, Romance of the Three Kingdoms 13 has dumbed things down a lot. If you want the best of the war side of things and the micromanaging of the war, and actually working out new patterns, new plans on the fly, then Romance of the Three Kingdoms 11 is the one to play. One of the things that really makes this game, though, right, and then this is basically me rounding up, one of the things that really makes this game is the relationships that you form, because you basically can start a family, you can grow that family, you can develop your children into the leaders of the next generation. It's not the typical. Now, a lot of the dialogue is done in kind of the talking heads form, but this is not anime talking heads, right? This is really highly detailed illustrations of historical figures, right? Yeah. And we're talking like, it's really, really well done. And you just look at it and you go, This is not anime. This is not cartoons at all. This is something that you'd see in a really detailed comic book or something like that, you know? And that adds a kind of glorious, you know, opulence to the game, I'd say, because of these really lush, really detailed, really colorful illustrations of each of the characters. The dialogue is still talking heads, but it's talking heads, you know, with like big gold chains and, you know, the rings and all that bling. So you don't really count it as talking heads. And the illustrations are just, it's just so lavish in its delivery of things and with the dialogue. Now, the dialogue, important thing, right? Important thing before I finish. There are two dialogue modes. There are two dubs of this. One of them is Japanese and the other one is Chinese. The subtitles are English. Mostly they're good. Some of them are a little shonky, but mostly they're good. If you're going to play this game, play the Chinese dub, right? Be true to form. It's a Chinese story. Play the Chinese dub.
This is kind of a classic example of what I've been thinking for a while. Games are kind of stupid.
How do you mean?
Because that's, compared to some other games, that would be labeled pretentious, what that is.
Mm. Yeah.
And I think the only reason it's labeled pretentious is because the general idea of what a game is. Like, you look at movies and movies have messages.
Yeah.
And you look at games, and games are just games that are gamers and do games. So anything that tries to do anything with a little bit more substance is automatically labelled as pretentious and kind of an extension of sort of tabletop games like Risk.
Well, I mean, if you look at it, if you look at games these days, how many, right, you know when Super Mario Galaxy came out, right? Everybody's going, it's a perfect game, it's a masterpiece, it's a 10. And then Super Mario Galaxy 2 came out, and it's a 10, it's a 10, it's a 10. Everybody's giving it a perfect 10. I'm sitting there playing it going, this is not a 10, this is not a masterpiece. This is just a glorified platform game by another name. I don't understand why you're all rating this so highly. What's the point of this game?
Wow, he took a different angle from what I was saying there.
What I'm saying is, the game is so simplistic, has no message, has no real story or anything like that. It's basically designed for people who have limited attention spans.
I wouldn't say that, it's just very disposable.
Yeah, that's what I mean, disposable. Sorry, I said limited attention spans and probably insulted a few people. Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah, don't do that. You're not an internet darling.
I'm too old to be an internet darling.
Stop talking in memes, Rob.
I was channeling Ryan. I was trying to channel Ryan and it didn't work.
Yeah, stop it. Bad, Rob. Bad. So moving onwards then.
Yes, moving on. But yeah, Romance of the Three Kingdoms, if you're a strategy buff like me, then highly recommended. If you're not, there, you know, if you don't want to play a strategy game or you think consoles can't play strategy games, then don't even bother. And
are you making it sound like a bloody perversion now?
Well, it is. It's not normal, man, that you don't like strategy. It's not normal.
You got to go to specialist shops.
I like strategy, but I don't want a strategy where you have to have a degree in history to.
You don't have to have a degree in history. It teaches you all while you're playing the game.
You get a degree from history by playing it.
Exactly.
That should be a selling point. That anyway.
You don't need a history degree for your game, do you, Andy?
No, you might need I wouldn't say you might need a science degree, but...
I don't know why, but for some reason I thought you were going to say you might need a sat-nav.
Well, you might do to find where this game is set, because I actually don't have a clue. It's fictional.
Is it historical fiction? Sat-nav probably
wouldn't help, but anyway, I've been playing... I wouldn't say I've been playing with sticks then.
if you want
we went
to.
Back in time.
Was it poo
if
sticks?
You want to, Andy, if you want to go on your back garden and play with sticks, go ahead.
Were you playing poo sticks?
Rob ruined it. Go ahead, Andy.
It's an actual game from Winnie the Pooh.
Andy, go ahead.
Anyway, I've been playing Sticks Shards of Darkness. And this is the third game in the trilogy so far that's started with Of Orcs and Men. I think it was called, Of Orcs and Men. And that was, basically, it had a character in it called Styx, and the next two games have revolved around Styx. And Styx is a goblin. He's a goblin, and he's a very sarcastic goblin.
Okay.
He has a personality that makes you want to play the game. And basically, Styx is your stealth Splinter Cell-esque game, where instead of a spy, you are a goblin with an attitude that basically has issues with the dark elven city and the dark elves and the dwarves that inhabit that city. But anyway, the gameplay sets out as your basic stealth, as I mentioned, Splinter Cell-esque gameplay, where you have to sneak in, you have to basically grab. The first mission is to, you have to grab caskets with soldiers' pay. So you have to sneak in, steal, and exit with a high emphasis on not getting caught. It's not like you can take out the full armies when you get caught.
Yeah, it's not like Assassin's Creed stealth, is it?
No, there's not a one button kill all of the guards like Assassin's Creed. But
he's very killable.
Yeah, and he doesn't like it when you get killed either.
Yeah, I mean, I've played a bit of it too, and that's the thing that I didn't like, because I felt it was a bit try-hard, because he talks about sort of, if you make money on the Twitch stream, I want a cut. Try pressing the jump button next time, idiot. Stuff like that.
See, if it was just try pressing the jump button next time, idiot, that would be fine.
Would you want to come inside the game and I'll go out there and hold the controller?
See, that one I don't mind as well. It just reminds me of, you know, the taunts you used to get on some games from years ago, where the game itself used to kind of wallow in the fact that you were dead. There was even one game where they actually had a song going, "You're dead, you're dead."
Well, it's better than the Resident Evil "You died" screen.
Oh yeah, you are dead. You can actually see that because he's getting eaten on the screen. But still.
See, so I liked that. I thought, yeah, that's the way to teach people to play the game better.
You can say, "You are dead." No way. He hasn't got a head. Yeah. The gameplay in this adds a unique spin, though, in this series, because you have an instantly health bar. You have an amber bar.
Yes.
And this adds quite a few different abilities. A major one is the ability to go invisible for a certain amount of time, but it is literally about 5 seconds, so you can't literally just walk through the map. And another one is it adds a strategic element to the game, and that's to create a clone, and that's to distract guards, you know, just cause distractions. You can just get spotted as the clone, and if the clone gets killed, you're perfectly fine.
That's an interesting mechanic.
But this also, this clone can also be controlled by a second player.
Oh, that's good.
So it adds a multiplayer element to it, which I think is a really good addition to it.
And, normally when you, with these sorts of games, when it comes to the whole distraction of guards and of NPC enemies, normally it's throwing something or knocking on a wall and running away or something like that.
Mm.
So actually having a clone act as a distraction,
it's a really good element. You just send it to run straight down an alley full of guards. And not only will you distract the guards, but you'll also know how many are there as well, because you'll obviously get a good view.
Sorry, for some reason I'm just imagining you were... you basically sending sticks down an alleyway, but he's butt naked and just, you know.
Yeah, I'm just comparing it to another game that I was playing, and I never actually finished, actually. I never finished Dishonored 2. I didn't think it was all that. But it sounds like Styx has better stealth mechanics than Dishonored did, by far.
It's heavily stealth. I didn't realise before I played it. I thought, it's going to be one of those games where it says, sneak in, and you don't. The majority of the games where it says, sneak into the space. Metal Gear Solid, for example. You don't.
You can just kill everybody. That's fine, too.
But you can't on this. And although it is very frustrating, was for me at the beginning, you get the hang of it.
Yeah. It's a mentality thing. I mean, it's like a game I played last year called Aragami.
Mm.
That was, if somebody sees you, you're dead.
Mm.
So Styx is basically like that, then. You have to play the game the stealth route. You can't just go in all guns blazing.
Now, yeah, I take it if you were extremely skilled at the game, because it does have a parry type control similar to what Assassin's Creed was, where if you press it at the right time, you can get an instant kill.
That's like a last resort, though.
But it never works on time. It's not easy to perform. So if there's three enemies, the odds are you're only going to manage to parry one. So, you can't literally go in and just attack them, which I do like, but I do recommend it as well if you like your stealth games. And also, if you don't get too frustrated at failing and falling off things every now and again, because jumping ledges is very tricky on this game.
Yeah, I found that as well, sort of lining things up.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's the same with like every game where you have to jump ledges. I remember when I was a kid and I had to play like certain platform games. Jumping ledges was just, it took a while. Prince of Persia, man, the horror. It jumped off a ledge on Prince of Persia, ended up impaled on swords.
Assassin's Creed spoiled people because you just hold like X or something and he'll jump on anything.
Oh, yeah, but sometimes you'd press the wrong button and he'll jump off a tower.
Yeah, it's Focus Home Entertainment again, which has shown how much they're really upping their game and getting incredibly good. I think they're maybe two or three games away from just emerging as a real power.
Well, they're already emerging as a real power on PC.
No, I mean, like, the people who, those in the know about
Right, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it breaks out of those sort of limited parameters and becomes, like, those who are just, I hate using the term, but casual, more casual gamers are aware of.
Oh,
I hate using that term because it had like negative connotations by the hardcore.
Oh, you mean the people who refer to casual gamers as filthy casuals?
Yes, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I don't like them either.
I would say this does have an upgrade element to it, though. So it's not just for something that you could just play.
Yeah.
It is something like, for example, you do gain experience to upgrade your skills. So, for example, you'll be able to stay invisible for longer.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that works.
Just a little bit about Focus Home Interactive. They're a French indie publisher.
Yeah, I'm becoming a bit of a fan of them. Yeah. I mean, Technomancer was flawed as it comes, but it was an ambition there, an ambition that I really appreciated. Same with The Surge.
Yeah.
With Styx. This is a company. He was not just saying, oh, we're indie, so we'll do indie stuff, like 8-bit nonsense, like Devolver do. A lot like Devolver a lot.
Yeah. I mean, just to give you an idea.
They're trying to push past what an indie studio should be.
Well, I mean, you know a bunch of the indie titles we've had in, like Shinest, The Lightning Kingdom, Shovel Knight, what else? Technomancer, obviously, The Surge. The Space Hulk Deathwing that I did, Seasons After Fall, some of the Pro Cycling Manager stuff, Farming Simulator, Divinity, you know, Divinity 2 we did.
Mm.
That's a Focus Home Interactive game.
Yeah, interesting. I really like them.
Yeah, they've got, it's the diversity of stuff that they have is what I'm impressed with, because they're not really just focused on one particular type of game or one particular genre or something like that.
Mm. Yeah. I honestly believe we're in the recent years, we're seeing the downfall of Ubisoft.
Yeah, I think so as well.
Yeah.
And I think that its position is opening up to somebody just pounce on that.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's going to be Focus Entertainment, but I'd like it to be.
The thing is, Ubisoft have strong ties in Canada, don't they?
Yeah.
And with Focus being a French indie video game publisher, they'd be the people I'd pick to kind of tap into Ubisoft's development market in Canada.
I just got to say this. The reason why I say Ubisoft is because people are generally just sick of the way they do business.
Mm.
Yeah, the very repetitive open-world mechanics of their games. It's people just people that just kind of, I'm sick of this. Yeah. I don't want to play this anymore. I'm done. I can't keep up with Ubisoft anymore.
The thing is, people said that about EA.
I know, but EA have the Sports Dynasty.
Yeah, I know. True. True. And that's what's been keeping them keeping their heads above water. Anyway, going from a game that is effectively stealth is the way to go to a game where stealth is definitely not the way to go.
Hit it with a big sword.
It literally is that. Right? It literally is. Run to it, hit it with a massive weapon, you know, then take all the goodies and run to the next one. Run to the next big monster, hit it with your massive weapon. Run to the next one, hit it with your massive weapon. Make sure you collect the loot. Now, when the original Tokiden game came out, everybody was saying, oh, it's a Monster Hunter clone. It's like Monster Hunter. It's Monster Hunter clone. Monster Hunter, Monster Hunter, Monster Hunter. And yes, okay, it was a Monster Hunter clone. They didn't really make any bones about it. This is another Koei Tecmo game. I think this is the second one of the show. The thing is, there's been Tokiden, and then there's Tokiden Kiwami, and then now there's Tokiden 2, which is what I'm going to be talking about. And this is out on the PC, PS4, and PS Vita. And Omega Force, who are the developers, they have done a major overhaul of a lot of things from Tokiden and Tokiden Kiwami. Now, the story starts off in Yokohama, and you are basically one of this secret band of warriors called Slayers, and you have been fighting against Oni, demons, that is, for over 1,000 years. And now the demons have launched an attack. They've suddenly appeared in the world from somewhere, from whatever other realm they inhabit, and they've attacked Yokohama, and soldiers are running in terror, citizens are running in terror, and the Slayers are basically saying, well, the Oni have basically revealed themselves to the world. There's no reason for us to be hidden in the shadows anymore either. Let's take the fight to them. So you then go into your first bout of combat, which is the tutorial combat. But before you get into that, you have an interesting creator character, where you can choose male or female, height, build, hairstyle, that sort of thing. So I created a guy who has long hair and a centre parting, looks like a thinner, more muscular, taller version of me, much more handsome, with kind of the facial hair and a monocle, because why the hell not?
Cost of really unconventional, and how'd you keep it on?
I don't
know.
There
you go, there's reasons
care.
Why not.
I didn't care. Oh, the thing that annoyed me, the reason why I bring up the monocle is, I took the time to look through the accessories, and I chose the monocle, and what they do, they put a mask over his face.
Oh, dear.
I spent ages designing that character, you know, designing the face to look perfect, and then they just covered the top half of his head so you could see was the mouth.
With you.
Sorry?
So we didn't have to look at your face either.
But we can't see his face at the minute.
That's true.
So anyway, so you and the Slayers, you're fighting this battle, and then something goes wrong, and you get dragged into this. There's a three-headed dragon in the sky, and you get dragged into this this twister type thing, and you fall into this light in the sky, and then you wake up, and you're somewhere. You end up in a place called Maharoba Village, and a young lady called the Professor has picked you up when you were unconscious. Your weapons and armor have been damaged beyond recognition, so they've basically been scrapped, and you have to start again. And you find out through the Professor and her basically robot assistant, Tokitsugu, I think his name is, you found out that you are nowhere near Yokohama, and it is now 10 years in the future. And the demons have basically taken over most of the world, wiping out most of the human population. So from there, you have to... This is where the interesting bits of this game come in, because it is effectively a monster hunting game, but it's a monster hunting game with a lot more depth and substance than Monster Hunter. I'll be honest. Yeah. And I know I shouldn't be saying that, but I am going to. It has a lot more depth and substance than Monster Hunter in terms of the story, in terms of what you can do, right? Because you've got a problem. Because you're out of time, the world is basically trying, the world, the reality, the nature of the universe, the fabric of reality, is trying to fix itself by erasing you from existence. And the only way for you to actually stay in that time and actually stay in existence is for you to form relationships with the people around you, the people of the village. So you have to take on the role of a slayer, protect the village, form relationships, that sort of thing. And the stronger your relationships are, the longer you can exist, in the hope of maybe somehow getting back to your own time. So you're always fighting this this battle against existence itself, which is one of the underlying subtexts of this game. But most of this game will involve you running around hitting things with a massive weapon. And you've got a selection of weapons. You've got giant gloves for, you know, if you're a melee fighter, you've got a massive katana, sword and shield, a massive club, spear, staff, whip, which is what I mentioned earlier, which is actually pretty good in this game because it's good for multiple enemies. And you can master these weapons, but you can also upgrade them, refine them, reforge them, stuff like that, by getting the body parts of various demonic creatures. Because in this game, the only thing that can kill a demon is another demon. So you basically take the body parts of different demons and you basically reforge and strengthen your weapons, create new weapons, stuff like that, which is essentially very Monster Hunter-like, but where it differs from Monster Hunter is the map, right? And this is where the narrative comes into play as well. Tokiden 2 is an open-world map, whereas with other hunting games, it's very much been, you know, small enclosed areas where you fight a big monster, then you move on to the next small enclosed area, fight another big monster, that sort of thing. Tokiden 2, you basically run around different environments, going from one to the other to another, fighting smaller monsters before fighting the bigger monsters and continuing on from there, which means it can actually build that that narrative for the world. Do you see what I mean?
Mm.
And anyway, keep this short then. If you're a fan of Monster Hunter, it's worth playing this game because it might be an eye-opener to you. It might give you an idea of what Monster Hunter could be if Monster Hunter truly pushed the boat out and went open world. Tokiden 2 is a great game. The graphics are a little bit chonky at times because it's a PS4 game, which I think was designed for the PS Vita and then just simply ported up and upscaled for the PS4 and the PC. But you can forgive that because there's something really, really nice about just running up to a giant monster and hitting it with a big weapon.
It's almost like he's setting up a segue there.
I wasn't.
Because the final game this week is Dragon Quest Heroes 2, sequel to Dragon Quest Heroes, The World, Trees, War, and Blight Below. Never realized that kind of rhymed. Yeah. Yeah, the first one was How About World, which is balanced with like humans living with monsters when Squiffy, as some mage, tried to take over the world by turning monsters bad. The second one is a sequel only in name because it takes place with an entirely new set of characters. Two cousins, you can add the names to them, so what they call that aren't really important. There's a boy who, blue hair, dual-wield swords, and he's the wacky one who just calls kings bro and stuff like that. And his cousin is purple-haired, wields one sword, and he's the sort of the one who says, oh, excuse my cousin, he doesn't know what he's doing, he's an idiot. Pay attention and, you know, eat your greens. You know, it's anime, RPG, blah, blah, trope 101. In fact, Final Fantasy, the world of Final Fantasy had the exact same thing going on.
Hmm.
And that wasn't even that long ago, so it shows you how derivative it is when Japanese RPG style games have like two leads.
Yeah.
I hoped that they'd separate them, so I won't have to put up with the guy because he's annoying. So annoying. Oh my God. But they're together for a lot of it. But this is mostly, it's the Dynasty Warriors, because it's put out by Omega Force. It's the Dynasty Warriors style of game, so it's open worlds. You fill it in as you travel through it. Square and triangle. Massive waves of characters to destroy and monsters to kill.
So it's basically the one versus a thousand thing from...
Yeah. But it's even more an RPG than the original one.
Okay.
Because it's starting to feel like the... It's just, I know that you use the engine, but you start the game and it has all the trappings of like a Dynasty, not a Dragon Quest game. Because that stuff down to when you save, you go down to a chapel and they have the same dialogue, the exact same dialogue that they're delivering.
Okay.
That sort of minutia of Dragon Quest is taken into consideration in the sort of the trimmings of the game. Which I like a great deal, but the actual playing of it, you do have the big open fields, you do have to fill out the map. And it does give you a direction to go in, but it feels more open world than just big sort of open areas that you've got to kill everybody in.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And because of that, it feels like an RPG that just has the combat system from Dynasty Warriors.
How does that mesh then? Is it fun?
Yeah, it's derivative, but nobody's ever accused that sort of style of game being anything but that. But yeah, it's a good match, you know.
Hmm.
It's a very good match, I felt. It has some interesting elements. I mean, the story is basically the same as the before.
Yeah.
In the sense that it uses a contrivance to get like people from all of the sort of the universe of Dragon Quest games into this. Like, it's got people featuring from my favorite Dragon Quest 8.
Yeah.
That appear. And it's all about sort of getting back at sort of the big mage who wants to destroy the world. In fact, that's pretty much the whole plot behind every single Dragon Quest game.
It's the plot behind every single Square Enix fantasy game, isn't it?
There's a mage who wants to destroy the world using a device to do it, yada, yada, blah, blah, blah.
Well, but, not so much the mage who wants to destroy the world, but somebody wants to destroy the world, or the world's going to die somewhere.
Yeah, it's usually a mage in Dragon Quest, though.
Yeah,
true. But yeah, I like it a great deal. It's elegant and simple.
Yeah.
It's RPG with a lot of the depth, but also... none of it at all, if that makes sense. It's a lot of the depth in the sense of you have to upgrade your equipment, you go to shops, you go to other towns, you can have like little mini games and collect things in the side quests. But when you get like a new JRPG, it's like sit through the first 3 hours and they're describing all the sort of the gameplay mechanics. And that's just, I'm just kind of sick of that, you know. It's kind of what I pushed me away from the whole genre.
The majority have like the tutorials, don't they?
Oh, I mean, this has a tutorial, but it's basically all self-explanatory.
It's weird how you say that, because it sounds like the tutorials on Romance of the Three Kingdoms are actually better than the ones on Dragon Quest.
Yeah, I mean, they're not that they're bad on this. It's just the simple, because that's all it needs to be.
Yeah.
And it just lets you get on with the game.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Do you know the weird thing? You were talking about how the RPG element combines with the Dynasty Warriors element, the one versus a thousand, works really yeah. well. It's weird how the Omega Force have been managing that, because Romance of the Three Kingdoms has RPG elements as kind of a garnish around the main, you know, the main strategy game. Is that what it's like with Dragon Quest as well, or is it?
It's light. You know what this is yeah. perfect for? This is a perfect my first RPG.
All right, okay, yeah. So they haven't gone into the RPG side of things, you know, with like a hammer and clubbed you over the head with it. They've just it's like the lettuce, you know, the lettuce in the burger type thing.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a garnish.
Yeah.
And I mean, I like it a great deal. It's Dragon Quest. It has a really unique style. It's quite childish, quite plain, colourful, but it's really, it's easy to get into and really easy to sort of get into that world.
Yeah.
And what the characters are, they're all sort of broad and stereotyped and caricatured. But it's just nice, you know.
I mean, what's the voice acting like? Because I saw the trailers, you know, they did the Meet the Heroes trailers.
Mm.
I saw all of those, and the voice acting from the trailers seemed to be okay, but...
Yeah, I think that's as far as I go. Okay. It's... It just exists, you know. I say it like that in such a derogatory way, but it just exists. It's there. It's fine. Okay. But yeah, I think that's what I like about it. It's a no-nonsense RPG, and there's a lot of nonsense in the modern RPG.
Yeah, true.
So this is like a great antidote to people who just want to play like something with like a decent amount of depth, expanding your party, meeting new people, going new places, knacking a lot of monsters. You have a slime in this. It's actually voiced by the same voice actor that plays Kagura in Gintama.
Oh, right. It's Kagumiya, is it?
Yeah, which is lovely. It's a lovely touch. If you've not seen slime, slimes are the blue things, and this one has like a general's hat on for the military. Which just tells you about the sort of game it is.
Yeah.
See, that just sounds fun.
Yeah, yeah. That's the worst you could ever say about this game. It's fun. You have to be kind of a killjoy not to get something out of it, really.
Thing is, coming from you, that's pretty high praise.
Yeah, because we get exposed to a lot of games, and a lot of them are just kind of, oh, that exists.
But we're not critics.
No, we're not. That exists. Ooh, that exists. Ooh, okay, that exists. This is just, this is great. It's just so simple. It's not trying to be anything. It's charmingly straightforward.
Yeah.
And that's a nice quality.
I think I'm going to have to play Dragon Quest. Because I played the first one. I was really late to the party with the first Dragon Quest Heroes game. I played it long after everybody else did. And I enjoyed it, but it had some niggly issues that I didn't like. But overall, I enjoyed the game. I thought it was a lot of fun.
It's cleaned up now. Yeah. But yeah, it's just charming. It's just charming and simple and straightforward, colourful, bright, energetic, cheery.
It's one of those weird things, because... Dragon Quest is fundamentally a turn-based RPG when it comes to the combat, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And it was. What's that like? Is it just? Is it full on go with the flow, Kingdom Hearts, Dynasty Warriors style combat now, or
it's just totally Dynasty Warriors? The gameplay is Dynasty Warriors. It's just kind of being torn down and bolstered up with the RPG stuff.
So, how does it feel playing a Dragon Quest game with that sort of combat when?
It'll make it basically impossible to go back to the old style. But anyway, yeah, that's Dragon Quest Heroes 2, and that fills out our full selection of games this week on PressX. So going through them again, that was The Surge of the Walking Dead Season 3, Romance of the Three Kingdoms 13, Styx.
Shouts of Darkness.
That's the fella. Tokiden
2.
That one. And Dragon Quest Heroes 2.
Are you not going to say the tagline for it?
There's a tagline for it?
Yes, it's not just Dragon Quest Heroes 2.
I haven't got the tagline for it. What's the tagline for it?
I can't remember. I know it's got a name, though.
Yeah, it's not got a name, Rob.
It does.
But yeah. It's the American are writing a nice niche for himself, like this with Dragon Quest Builders.
Oh, yeah. I've got it. Dragon Quest Heroes 2, Twin Kings, and The Prophecy's End.
Yeah, it's just this and Dragon Quest Builders. It's just a nice little niche that they're making themselves. And there's not enough of that. There's just too much uniformity, like we said last week in the show.
Yes, there is.
Oh, yeah. That's it for this week. If you enjoyed this show, well done. You can be one of us. We like you. But to put a little bit back in, you can share us with your friends, any of the shows we do on the network. More specifically, you can go onto the Audio Boom and check out what other shows we have there. Or you can listen to us on iTunes and subscribe and give us a rating, because it helps expose us to more people. More people listen. And generally, more people listen is a good thing, because we can grow in unique and interesting ways. But until we meet again, one miserly and grey day in England and the North, because that's how we do it. I have been Rob.
I've been Andy.
And I've been Rob.
Thanks for listening. See you next time.